Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, March 7th, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll get an update on upcoming activities at the Zach Gordon Youth Center. We'll learn about future classes at the Canvas with Brandon Howard and Emma Davidson. We'll find out how you can get free tax help courtesy of AARP with guest Nora Laughlin. We'll talk with author Carol Feller Brady about her book, Through the Storm, Towards the Sun. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. Currently 44 degrees at the Juno Airport, 44 in Hoonah, and 43 in Gustavus.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Officials with Diné College and Northern Arizona University have signed an agreement to make it easier for students to transfer between the schools. As Carrie Young reports, it will also promote more faculty collaboration.
The Memorandum of Understanding was signed by the school's presidents earlier this month. The agreement will be good for 5 years and then reevaluated. Rita Chang is the president of NAU. She says the colleges have long had a working relationship with each other.
So this formalizes our relationship. It allows for a framework on which to build, and we are really excited about the possibilities for students and for our faculty and staff.
In addition to resource sharing, the agreement will allow Diné College students to earn NAU class credits if they later transfer there for a higher degree. 3 bachelor's degrees are currently offered at Diné College. Administrators hope this formal relationship will expand the educational opportunities for students. For National Native News, I'm Carrie Young.
85 dog teams left the start line over the weekend for the 44th annual Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race in Alaska. Mushers come from all over the world to compete in the 1,000-mile journey. As Emily Schwing reports, the vast majority are from Alaska, and this year, 7 are Alaska Native.
Pete Kaiser from Bethel, Alaska, is among a handful of Native mushers who could prove competitive this year. For the second year in a row, Kaiser won the mid-distance Kuskokwim 300 back in January. He's run 6 previous Iditarods.
You know, it's a good sign to have won a couple races this year, but at the same time, this is a whole new race, and we're going to have to approach it differently than those races for sure.
Kaiser's racing against 6 former champions, including John Baker. He's the only Alaska Native musher who has ever won the 1,000-mile race.
I'm going to race harder than I've ever raced.
Baker, from the west coast town of Kotzebue, usually describes his team as the best he's ever had. But this year, he says, it's the best dog team he's ever seen.
I've seen a lot of teams that were better than mine in the past, but I'd have to look really hard this year. This team has come together. I've done a lot of different things training them, and I just feel that they're a super team.
Over the next 2 weeks, mushers and their teams will race across the northernmost state for the finish line in the coastal Gold Rush era town, Nome. For National Native News, I'm Emily Schwing.
The president of the National Congress of American Indians is urging President Obama to nominate a Supreme Court justice who respects tribal governments. The National Congress of American Indians recently adopted a resolution urging the president and the Senate to move forward on a replacement for the vacant seat. NCAI President Brian Cladisby says there's a need for a justice who's familiar with Western and rural issues and tribes. The resolution encourages consideration of nominees with experience or interest in federal Indian law and who respect the role of tribal governments under the U.S. Constitution and treaties with the U.S. Many people have advocated online for Obama to nominate Native American federal judge Diane Humitiwa. The president is likely to face a battle to try and replace a justice after the recent death of Antonin Scalia, as Republican senators have vowed to ignore the president's choice. Hundreds of people attended the funeral over the weekend for indigenous activist Berta Cáceres. The leader and environmental activist was killed last week in her home by gunfire. The 45-year-old reportedly had told police about death threats. The Associated Press reports her family is hoping the international attention will pressure authorities to find those responsible for her death and that it won't go unpunished. Authorities are said to be investigating with help from the United States. The activist won the 2015 Goldman Environmental Prize for her role in fighting a dam project. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. If you or a loved one suffer from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who've had their day one at nativenews.net. Support by Vision Maker Media, whose mission is to empower and engage Native people to tell stories. On February 20th, Vision Maker Media celebrates 40 years of advancing Native culture, heritage, wisdom, sacred stories, and the storyteller. More at visionmakermedia.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 7th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour, and my first guests in the studio today are Jordan Nigro. She's the executive director at the Zach Gordon Youth Center. Welcome to the show, Jordan.
Hi, Scott.
Nice to have you. And Alan Truitt, he is the coordinator for the BAM program at Zach Gordon. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Hi, Scott.
You're the ED, right? Did I get that right?
Well, really, I'm the manager.
Oh, because there was a little bit of a re...
Because Zach Gordon is not a nonprofit.
Okay.
So we belong to the city.
Yeah. Got it.
Yep. So Scott saw me smiling when he said that.
Yeah.
We were smirking. But no, I'm the manager of the center, and BAM, now the after-school program, is one of our programs, which we've talked about on the air before. And we are very excited because this spring break, which is coming right up here, March 21st to the 25th, we are going to be offering a spring break camp, which we've never done before. And partially we are able to do that because of the BAM program, because we were all kind of chatting and realized, oh, BAM won't be happening during spring break. We have some staff and we can have them run a camp. So Truitt is going to be one of those staff here and to do that, and he came to share a bit about the camp and all the fun stuff they're going to do.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about what BAM is.
Sure. BAM is the Body and Mind After School Program, and we work in the middle schools to connect community volunteers with students in the schools to do different types of after school activities, from cooking classes to technology classes to art classes, whatever. There was different things that students might be interested in.
And how long has this been going on now?
This is our fourth year, and it's our first year as part of the Zach Gordon Youth Center.
All right. That sounds interesting. And so spring break's in 2 weeks, and how is that going to translate over at Zach Gordon? What kind of classes or activities will be available?
So we're going to run a spring break camp during spring break week for 8 to 12-year-olds. Our sort of theme for the camp is exploring the Juno parks and recreation options here in town. We're going to visit the different facilities that are available. We're going to go ice skating at the Treadwell Arena. We're going to go and visit the Diamond Pool, the Eagle Valley Center, and the Arboretum, and explore some of the mining history and those type of things that are in our Juno park system.
Oh, that sounds like fun. And so you said from 8 to 12 years old can sign up. And how does one sign up?
So they can come right on over to Zach Gordon Youth Center. We do ask for in-person registration. And so our address is 396 Whittier Ave, which, if any of you know where Centennial Hall is, we are right across the parking lot from Centennial Hall.
And what's cost for this camp?
It's $150 for the week, and that's from 8:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. in the afternoon. It's a full-day camp. And Monday through Friday of that week from March 21st to the 25th.
And I'm assuming transportation is included.
Yep, transportation is included. The drop-off and pickup is at Zach Gordon. So the nice thing is when you bring your kids at 8:30 in the morning to the center, then at 3 o'clock when the camp ends, the center is still open until 6 p.m. So if parents aren't quite off work or whatever, the kids can hang out. 8-year-olds will need to be picked up. But once you're 9, you can stay there without an adult. So that's kind of nice. And this is our first year offering a spring break camp, and we hope to do it again next year. So We know we're kind of getting the word out a little late this year because it kind of came to us at the last minute, but we're still excited about it. I think it's a great opportunity, and I know that we are not all able to plan way ahead, so I'm thinking there's probably some families out there that this would be an exciting opportunity for that maybe need something for their kids to do that's fun and healthy during spring break so they don't have to worry about what they're doing while they're at work or try to find a child care for the week, because I know that can be really a struggle for families sometimes.
Sure. Will you two tell me a little bit about day-to-day life at Zach Gordon? What's it look like over there?
Yeah, so, you know, the center is open during the week from 11 until 9, Monday through Thursday, and then from 11 to 10 on Fridays and 3 to 10 on Saturdays. We ask that kids not come until after school hours. So at the 11 o'clock hours are usually, you know, we have some adults that come and use the workout space, and we have some kids that are working on their GED or something like that that might come and have lunch with us. But generally speaking, it's after school until 9 or 10, depending on the night. And we have all sorts of stuff happening. There's outdoor basketball. We're just getting ready. Actually, coming up this Saturday, we have the Master Gardeners are doing a class at the center from 9 until noon, a Master Gardeners class, and that's free and open to the public. And part of what's exciting for us about that is our staff are participating, and we're getting started on the garden. It's that time of year, although I'm a little leery. Hopefully,
it's kind of cold still today.
It's only March. What's today? The 7th. So you know, but so as summer gets going, we'll be doing more and more gardening, which is exciting. We have a great new kitchen that was just finished this last fall, and so we do a lot of cooking. We feed a lot of meals out of the center. We have a climbing wall there, and so on Wednesdays we have climbing team, and then we have some other activities that happen around climbing and. Yeah.
You mentioned some adults working out. What's mm-hmm. the age range for people that can hang
out
there?
Well, we do have a small gym, and so adults can pay to work out there. So we have a small handful of people that come over and work out during lunch, which is great. It's an affordable way to work out in Juneau, and money goes to a great cause. But the range in general for kids is up to 20. And then if you're just coming to work out, that's what you do, and you're not hanging out in the kids' spaces and stuff like that. But it's up to 20 years old, and yeah. And sometimes we have, you know, kids that used to hang out there that are a little older than that might come back and volunteer and do something like that. But we ask that they really be doing something, helping us out.
All right. And Alan, the BAM program has been going for 4 years, you say.
Yeah.
And you've been associated with it for that long too, right?
No, just 1 year now. Okay. With a little less than a year now, but since it came to the Zach Gordon.
What do you like most about it? It seems to be a successful program.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to like about it. There are a lot of great kids in our schools that I get a chance to work with and get to know over time. There's a lot of great volunteers in our community who want to come in and share their different interests and hobbies with kids.
And that's what BAM does, right? You find experts or just passionate people in the community that want to share their passions with the kids, right?
Yeah, they don't necessarily have to be experts, but they have to have an interest and some time to spend with middle school kids. So people will do, you know, I mentioned cooking classes. I'd love to find someone who, because they ask me all the time about a Minecraft activity. So if anyone knows anything about Minecraft, I'd love to hear from you, and is willing to do it after school, things like HerSpace, which is an activity that helps girls develop positive and healthy relationships with themselves and their friends, to right now I have a Magic the Gathering group. It's a little card game the kids play, to like job skills things like junior achievement and babysitter training.
And if I remember correctly, it's pretty flexible, right? It can be after school for as many days as the person can do it?
Yeah. We do Monday through Thursday. Our time is very specific, and then it's from 3 to 4:25. But we can do flexible schedules. It can be once a week for however long you might like. It might be we ask that people do at least 4 sessions usually. But once a week for a while, or it could be all in 1 week, just to, you know, certain curriculum or content is best that way, or you just happen to have that week that you can do that, and that's great.
All right. If they do want to volunteer, how can they get a hold of you?
Sure. They can reach me at 796-5811. It's 796-5811, or they can call Zantagahini Middle School, and they'll connect you with me.
Okay. Jordan, Alan, what else? Are we missing anything?
No, I think those are the key things. We, you know, if BAM seems like something that, you know, volunteer-wise, maybe you don't have the time for, but you want to do a one-time thing, you can also call us at the center. Sometimes we have volunteer things going on there that we need help with. So, you know, it takes a village, as they say. So we are pretty excited about this camp, and really I think it's going to be a great way for some kids to spend spring break exploring all that Juneau has to offer, and come on over to the center to sign up.
I thought of one more question. If a young person is listening, or a parent of a young person is listening, and they've never been to Zach Gordon before, how would you convince them to come down and hang out?
Well, let's see. I think one thing that I am constantly amazed at, even every day when I walk into work, there are so many things to do in there. But one thing is, we have the only pool tables in town, I believe, that kids can access. The climbing wall is free. Like, everything is free. And that's what I feel like a lot of families don't realize, maybe, is that, you know, if you're paying to go do an activity somewhere else, which is great, you don't have to stop doing that. It's good to support everything in town. But, you know, what we have to offer is free, and it's a really fun place with a lot of folks that work there who really care about kids. And there's always something good out to eat. They were making pizza from scratch when we left, actually. So, which I will admit I grabbed a piece of, and it was good. So, you know.
Bring some to June afternoon next time, please.
Next time we'll bring some over. We did have somebody, that's another fun, you know, we had somebody come in and do cupcakes with the kids recently, and it was great fun. She came in with cupcakes that were all already baked, and the kids helped decorate, and, you know, so we have this great kitchen that also lends to some really fun volunteer opportunities, and, you know, it's just, yeah, everybody likes to eat, right?
So. Yes, indeed.
Well, admittedly, I don't spend that much time at the Zach, mostly in the schools, but I think it's great about it is it's a safe place for kids to spend time, to hang out with all these free activities and snacks that really gives that place where it's safe to be, and that's important that a lot of kids don't necessarily have.
Absolutely. All right, Jordan Nigro, Alan Truitt, thank you both for coming on the show today.
Thanks,
Scott.
for this station comes from Ken Kelsch, candidate for mayor. Paid for by Kelsch for Mayor. 1586 Evergreen Avenue, Juneau, Alaska.
You're listening to a Juneau afternoon here on Monday, March 7th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host, is about 22 minutes after the hour. And joining me now in the studio from the Canvas is Brandon Howard and Emma Davidson. Welcome to the show, you two.
Hey, thanks for having us, Scott.
Yeah, nice to have you. Emma Davidson, the new visiting artist here in Juneau. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're from Massachusetts. What are some of your first impressions of Juneau?
Oh, it's great. I cannot get over the landscape. I am a nature geek, so perfect spot for me. Having a blast so far, about a month in.
Good. Welcome, Brandon. Remind me of your position at the Canvas.
So I'm the artistic coordinator at the Canvas, which is a, I don't even know how they give the position a title, really. I am the catch-all at the Canvas.
Artistic coordinator.
Artistic coordinator.
And give us some context for Emma's position. Was it Tim and Andrea that had her job before?
Yeah, so Tim Ortiz, Andreana Donahue, they were here. They spent a year with us. And it's something that the artistic coordinator before myself, Chris Taylor, and Kelly Manning, the director over at the Canvas, kind of brainstormed and put together this really fascinating idea to bring new artists into Juneau, and not just for a couple weeks, not for a month, for a long period of time. I mean, for a year, to introduce the community to new art, new technique, and introduce the artists that we work with to you know, different visions of art and different mediums.
All right. Emma, how did you find out about the Canvas?
Well, I found them on a job posting board that offered artist jobs. I was living in Pittsburgh before I came out here and was looking to move to the West Coast and was just applying for different residencies and really happy to be here and, spend a year in Alaska. I mean,
great. And what's your medium of choice?
Well, I bounced back and forth between printmaking and fibers, a lot of drawings, but I think mixed media is really kind of more fun to me.
Okay. When do you get, you're probably already started, but probably have some classes coming up that you two want to tell us about, a spring break camp I know of as well?
Yeah, so upcoming classes, we're going to be doing a painting with felt class. So that's where students would get to experience two forms of felt making, one form being wet felting, another needle felting, and combining them together to create really, really great wall pieces. So you would wet felt your background, needlepoint in your foreground. It'll be nature-inspired. We have some great landscapes to pull from, and you'll get to make it out of an organic material. It comes from the land, so.
Okay. And is this a youth class, adult class?
It's an adult class, and then for youth, we're going to be doing needle felting animals, more sculptural.
Okay, that sounds like fun. And did you mention the spring break camp, Brandon?
Yeah, so we have a a selection of classes during during spring break. Emma's needle felted critters is one of them, and I think it is the most adorable class that we've ever offered at the Canvas. Even if you're not a kid or having kids that are wanting a spring break class, I'd recommend taking a look at our website and taking a peek at that class. We're thinking about offering it for adults down the road just because I've had so many people approach me and ask if they're ever going to offer that as an adult class. But we're also offering a block printing class with Inari Kalanen, amazing artist here in town. She does great printmaking as well. And then Mercedes Munoz is offering some wheel throwing classes. So all four of those are filling up very quickly. I think we have a couple spaces in Emma's class left, and some in Inari's, and I think a couple in each of the wheel throwing classes, but they generally fill pretty quickly.
What would you say is the average length of a class?
So these classes are definitely built for, you know, working parents. The classes go from 9 to noon in the morning, and then there's a lunch break, and then from 1 to 4 in the afternoon. So these are 3-hour classes. They're a little bit longer.
Okay. And you mentioned the website. Remind us what that is.
Yeah, so that's canvasarts.org. And if you check out that website, we've got a list of all of our kids' classes as well as upcoming adult classes.
Describe for us, and maybe you could do this, Emma, some of your first impressions of the Canvas. What's the working atmosphere like over there? You know, I often walk by, and I've enjoyed some shows in the gallery, and every time I walk by, it looks like people are smiling and having fun in the workspace there.
Yeah, I would definitely say it's a lot of fun. Everyone is very welcoming and open. We love having visitors, something that I have learned, and yeah, really just a lot of fun, you know.
Great. Well, what would you add to that, Brandon?
Yeah, it is a blast, but it is extremely dynamic. You know, you mentioned coming by and checking out our shows, and, you know, we work really hard to put up strong, beautiful exhibits that, you know, are respectful of the artists that that show in the gallery space. This month we have Jeff Douglas, who is an artist that's been working at the Canvas for years, and I think I end up saying about every show that, you know, the latest show is one of my favorites, but this one's really spectacular. He has some incredible line work. Next month we have an exhibit that is going to be amazing. You actually did a video piece on George Gress's guitars a while ago. That was incredible, by the way. If people want to see the guitars in person, because it's Folk Fest, we're going to be showing George Gress's guitars in the gallery, and he and his son are actually considering, no promises here, but considering playing a few songs that night too to showcase not only the craftsmanship but the beautiful sound of these guitars.
Yeah, homemade right here in Juneau.
Yeah, really spectacular.
Alaskan woods. Excellent. Well, it sounds like a lot of cool stuff is going on as usual over at the Canvas. Anything else that you'd like to share?
No, I think that about sums it up.
Great. Well, thanks for coming on the show. Nice to meet you, Emma, and welcome to Juneau.
Thank you.
Pleasure as always, Brandon. We'll see you both soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 7th of March, 2016. It's the birthday of the songwriter Townes Van Zandt, born 1944 into a wealthy oil family in Texas, died in 1997 at the age of 53. 1994, on this day, the Supreme Court ruled that parody can be protected by the Fair Use Clause of the Copyright Act of 1976. 1857, on this day, the National Association of Baseball Players met in New York, and they decided that a baseball game should be made up of 9 innings instead of 21 runs. It's the anniversary of the Civil Rights March from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama, 1965. 600 civil rights activists left Selma to march 54 miles to the state capitol. They only got 6 blocks before state and local lawmen attacked them with dogs and billy clubs and tear gas. They made it to Montgomery 2 weeks later, and by the time they got there, they were 25,000 strong. 1923, on this day, Robert Frost's poem Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening was published, the poem that he called his best bid for remembrance. Frost originally claimed that he wrote it all at once, but an early draft of the poem shows that it was reworked several times. He said the poem was about a December night when he drove a wagon to town with some produce from his farm to sell so he could buy Christmas gifts for his family. He couldn't sell a single thing. Evening came. It started to snow, and he had to head back home. He was almost home when he was overwhelmed by a feeling of shame, and the horse stopped, and Frost sat in the wagon, and he wept like a baby, he said. Eventually, the horse jingled its bells, and Frost pulled himself together, and he headed back home to his family. Here's a poem for today by Faith Sheeran, music at my mother's funeral. During the weeks when we all believed my mother was likely to die, she began to plan her funeral, and she wanted us, her children, to consider the music we would play there. We remembered the soundtrack of my mother's life, the years when she swept the floors to the sound of an 8-track cassette called Feelings, the Christmas when she bought a Bing Crosby album about a bright Hawaiian Christmas day. She got Stravinsky's Rite of Spring stuck in the tape deck of her car, and for months each errand was accompanied by some kind of dramatic movement. After my brother was born, there was a period during which she wore a muumuu and devoted herself to King Sunny Ade and his African beats. She ironed and wept to Evita, painted to Italian opera. Then, older and heavier, she refused to fasten her seatbelt, and there was the music of an automated bell going off every few minutes, which annoyed the rest of us, but did not seem to matter to my mother, who ignored its relentless disapproval, its insistence that someone was unsafe. A poem by Faith Sheeran, Music at My Mother's Funeral, from Orpheus Turning, published by the Broadkill River Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Staples, offering tech services for small businesses like PC setup and repair, some tasks completed by the next day. Staples.com/tech services, Staples, make more happen. And by TIAA, whether it's investing, advice, banking, or retirement, TIAA is committed to helping those who do good do well. Learn more at TIAA.org. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And you're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, March 7th, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton. And on today's show, we're honored to have in the studio Carol Feller Brady.
Uh-uh.
She is the author of Through the Storm Towards the Sun. Let me turn up that volume right there.
Okay. Yeah. I can't hear you. I hear your voice, but I can't hear you.
Okay. Okay. And also in with us on the show today is her daughter, Helen Feller. Welcome to both of you for being on the show.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you. Helen, while we get the sound figured out over there, can you tell us a little bit about your mom's book?
Okay. Yes, she wrote this book not really intending to have it published. So then she sent the manuscript to her mother-in-law down in Sausalito, and she had it published.
Okay.
And she wrote the book in the International Year of the Child.
Okay. Carol. So I've had a chance to read parts of the book, and it talks about growing up in Sitka.
Can't figure out what I did with my other... Here, I'll do it.
Okay.
I have two more of these, and I don't know. I put them away so good.
You know what we'll do? Why don't we go to Bird Note for a second, and we'll come back with in just a second. Stand by here.
This is Bird Note. Welcome to spring. Let's step into this lively cattail marsh and surround ourselves with the sound of glossy black birds with bright red shoulder patches. These are male red-winged blackbirds. The male brandishes his red epaulets to warn away other male red-winged blackbirds from his patch of cattails. At the same time, he sings to lure females into his marshy territory. Many females, in fact. While most bird species pair up and become a twosome during the spring breeding season, the red-winged blackbird has a different strategy. One male will claim a territory and attract up to a dozen females to form a harem. These females look nothing like the males. They're smaller, with mottled brown backs and heavily streaked bellies. Each female weaves an intricate nest, often suspended over the water. Scientists examined one nest that contained 142 cattail leaves, 705 pieces of grass, and 34 strips of willow bark. And while she is building that amazing nest, the male is busy fending off other males and courting more females for his harem. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Okay. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 7, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 20 minutes until the top of the hour. And again, we are in the studio with Carol Feller Brady. She is the author of Through the Storm, Towards the Sun, and her daughter, Helen Feller. Very nice to have both of you here today. Nice to see you.
Thank you.
Goodness cheese for being here. Carol, can you please start by telling us what it was like growing up in Sitka?
Well, like I said before, it was surreal. You ask Gil Truitt or several other people in Sitka up there in the cottages. That whole area there where Sheldon Jackson School is was owned by the Board of National Missions, and all the faculty that worked there were from overseas. They were working, their main objective there was to teach the natives how to work with their skills so that they could earn a diploma and be able to use that. They had many skills. They were very smart. Yes, that area where I grew up was largely owned by the Board of National Missions. And it was wonderful. They had very, very expert ways in teaching the natives to earn their diploma. It was a training school at first. And it was out 1875 or somewhere around there, and later became accredited to high school for students from Barrow to Ketchikan. And they were allowed to live the life they were trained to live, I guess, like the people that wanted to go back to their village and do their own clan way of living, they chose to do that. They could go back to their village, but they had their graduation paper. They were asked, do you want to go back to your villages and your clan ways? If you do, that was really great. So the other people wanted to go western. They were given a plot of land up there by the Board of National Missions, right above the Totem Park, the famous Totem Park. And they were sort of surrounded by Sheldon Jackson School and on over. There were three rows of homes, and on down was the entrance of the Totem Park. My grandmother lived there. This is where my father's clan lived before they went to war with Russians in 1804. And the picture in my book there is a group picture. My sister was a baby then, was 1912. And that picture that my aunt Yolinda Bailey gave me has a lot of history to it. That was the descendants of the people that fought the Battle of Sitka in 1804. And also there's some more to this. Well, there's that story of when the Kiksuddy pushed the attacking party back. They were heading down the beach. There's a beautiful story in the book about that. One of our relatives ran on down there, and they never saw him again. They thought he was an explosion. There's a real interesting story about that. And there's still more about that, those pictures. I'm sure that people would love to read it.
Okay, you're listening to the voice of Carol Feller Brady. She is the author of Through the Storm Towards the Sun. And also with us in the studio is Helen Feller, her daughter. And it's nice to have, again, both of you here. Helen, you were telling us that your mother wrote this book for herself, but it was sent down south. Is that right? Tell us more about that, please.
Yes. she wrote this story about her life, and it was addressed to her children. And her mother-in-law wanted to see the manuscripts, so she sent the manuscripts to her mother-in-law down in Sausalito, California, and then she went ahead and had it published into a book.
Without your mother's permission, is that correct?
Oh, I think she must have. She must have gotten my mom's permission. Oh,
okay.
Yes, she had. It was so wonderful to be taking my manuscripts over to her all over the San Francisco Bay Area. Yes, and I'd leave them with her, and I had no idea that my mother-in-law and my husband were very literary, and they saw my writing as being creative right away. Yes, my mother-in-law asked me, Carol, did you take creative writing? I said, oh, no, I did in school, and I got such a high grade, but I never gave it a thought. She said, well, you keep writing, and just write like you feel. It turns out that book is many things, other things, besides being now noticed by the University of First at Berkeley. The person that did this studied at Yale, and she decided to come up to Alaska and come to our luncheon over there at Book Ed, and wanted to talk about the history. So we did invite her to spend time with us. And when she went down, she had studied at Yale. Her name is Holly Guys. My husband said foreign Guys. Yes, she did a very good job teaching the college students at Berkeley. And I was really surprised to hear that's a book under 100 pages long, and it's a healing book. It's got a lot of history. It's got many distinguished characters, like my grandfather, who was a guide for John Muir, a great orator, who put much of the material into the totem lore. I joined two writers, my grandfather and his mother, Mrs. Cadishan, who went to school in Victoria for a long time. So she was, they noticed that she was really advanced, yet knew her Tlingit ways, hideaways, whatever. Yes, so I'm really happy to know that because I was left alone practically at 10 years of age, and I just had people telling me things. But I wanted so bad to write about the cottages. We had spent a lot of our days about the campus, Sheldon Jackson School. We were exposed to such beautiful people as the faculty there. They were mostly Scottish. Again, they were from Africa, sometimes had heavy accent.
Okay. But
they were such beautiful teachers, and we saw all these students. That's when they first wrote the book, The Song of School. And it talks about Tina Hyde, the Elliot Eskimo. And I'm really happy. I think we'd like to bring that up at the convention for when they have breaks. They want to relax. They could maybe sing a song about one of the native schools that are no more. That was Sheldon Jackson School and Wrangell Institute.
Okay.
I went to the convention just for the last 2 days in Wrangell last fall. And I looked around and I thought, many of these people stem from the people that started school way back when. And then I ended up at the AFN and I looked around. Yes, from Barrow to Ketchikan. So I just ache to try real hard to bring the beauty of how Sitka was when I was little.
And, yeah, and that is in Through the Storm, Towards the Sun. Where can somebody get the book, Carol?
You could order from Author House, or there's two
Hearthside Books.
Where
I think Hearthside Books, too.
Here in town.
Hearthside Books here, yes.
Oh,
and
great.
Amazon.
Okay, and that's Through the Storm, Towards the Sun, author Carol Feller Brady, and daughter Helen Feller in the studio. I wish we had more time to talk and hear more about your book, but we've run out of time. Thank you so much for sharing, again, the book available at Amazon, Hearthside Books, and also mm-hmm. Author House.
Yeah.
Thank you both so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For having us.
Thank you for asking us.
listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 7th. It's about 6 minutes until the top of the hour. I've been joined in the studio now by Nora Laughlin, and she's here to tell us how you can get free tax help courtesy of the AARP. Welcome to the show, Nora.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, so tell me again what your position is.
Well, I'm the location coordinator for the ARP Foundation Tax Aid Program in Juneau. And that's just a fancy title for I lead the program here in Juneau.
Okay.
We have a number of volunteers. It's all volunteer help, and we are tax preparers who are, we're all certified in advanced certification from the IRS.
And AARP, American Association of Retired Persons.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
But you don't necessarily have to be retired to get free tax help. Is that right?
No, you don't. We service anybody with a low to moderate income with a target audience, clients of seniors and over 50. Over 50 isn't necessarily a senior in my mind, but then I am one. So we have a... primary objective of helping taxpayers not only complete their taxes and file them electronically, but also paying the lowest possible legal tax.
Well, that sounds like a good thing.
Oh, and we all just love doing it. People are so grateful.
So you said a person with low to medium to moderate income. If there's somebody listening that qualifies, or is do you have an actual line or...
A line?
Sort of income, sorry.
Oh, an income, no. And I've done people with over $100,000 income, and it really is not the amount of money a person makes as much as it is the complexity of their tax returns. There is an agreement under the Volunteer Agreement Act between the ARP and the IRS that we will do, we have a defined scope of forms that we can use. And we can't go outside that scope. We can't do anybody's return if they own rental income, if they have a farm, if they have a business that has employees or inventory or business losses or expenses over $25,000. Those are some of the parameters we have. There's a few others.
If somebody wanted to find you and get some of this free tax help, how do they do that?
Well, let me say first, my phone number, if you want more direct information, is 321-0207. And we are operating in three separate sites this year, similar to, Tax Aid hasn't been in Juneau since, I think 2013 was the last time we were here, so we're back. And in similar places, we are doing Monday mornings. We are at the Senior Center downtown. We begin about 8:30 and end about 11 o'clock, taking our last person about 11. And we do take appointments at that site. You just call Carol Camoli to schedule at 463-6175. That's at the Senior Center downtown, Monday mornings.
And remind us where the Senior Center is?
Senior Center is... on the corner of 12th and Egan. Yep.
Okay.
And then Tuesday evening, beginning about 4:30, we are doing taxes at the Greening Park Recreation Hall. We take the last person about 6:30. And that's at 1800 Northwood Drive. Then Saturday is our longest session. And we are at the New Valley branch of the public library out in the valley at 3025 Diamond Park Loop. We begin about 10:30 at that location and stop taking new people at about 4 o'clock. Please don't wait till the last minute. We have been comfortably busy up till now without people having a long wait, often with no wait, and... we're waiting for you to come in and let us help you.
All right. We have about 20 seconds left. Oh. Can you give us the contact info again for this free tax help?
You bet. My phone number, Nora Laughlin, 321-0207. And I am busy in retirement, so if I don't get back to you right away, I will get back to you.
Nora Laughlin of the AARP, thank you so much for coming in today. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.
Thank you, Scott.